This week, Sureka and I will be celebrating our 25th wedding anniversary. And many of the details of the preparations for our wedding so long ago have faded into the mists of time. In fact, I actually managed to avoid much of the planning and preparation by the cunning strategy of being in England when decisions had to be made. But one thing which does stick in my mind was this incredible process of making a seating plan for the reception. Oh, I'm seeing some smiles, yes. Working out which tables and which seats at which tables would be considered better or worse. And then working out who would be offended if they saw that someone was seated in a better place than they, even though they were both second cousins once removed. This was a Tamil wedding. There was an extended family there in full force, and relationships do quite quickly get complicated. I'm fairly sure that the teenagers who ended up sitting on a table with the 6 and 7 year old kids because we were misinformed about their age have never forgiven us. It's one of a few parts of that whole getting married process which honestly makes me think that when the time comes, it might be a good idea if my kids just elope. The wedding banquet that Jesus describes has a situation which is even more complex and more fraught with social pitfalls. For his was a culture in which honor and shame were highly valued and they were carefully tracked. Now, Jesus' message, when you look at it, seems fairly simple. When you come into the banquet room, don't push yourself forward. Don't claim the highest place, because that's a great risk. If there's someone there who's more important, you will be humiliated by the experience of your overreach being called out and being demoted. No, instead, Jesus says, take a place at the back. Then when the host calls you forward to a better seat, you will be doubly honored. Humility for the win. That is, if the host calls you forward. Because, of course, that's the problem with the strategy Jesus proposes. Most of the time, the host isn't going to notice that one of their guests has humbly taken a seat at the back. Hosts actually have quite a lot of other things on their mind. If you're important enough that your absence from the top table is obvious, that's one thing, but in that case, you weren't likely to have been demoted in the first place. No, if you are a middle-ranking guest, no one's going to notice that you've taken a seat by the toilets. And any of the other guests who do notice are probably going to assume that you're there for a reason. They're going to start speculating about what you've done to be placed in such disgrace. So taking the seat of little honor is actually most likely to be a self-fulfilling prophecy. You will be genuinely demoting yourself. And then on top of that, you're going to be sitting with other people who have little or no honor. And you're going to miss out on the conversations taking place at the important tables. You're going to be mixing with the low honor crowd, and their lack of status is going to rub off on you just as much as you would have hoped to have gained honor by sitting with the important people at the front. Jesus' strategy makes no sense. In a culture of honor and shame, such as defined the first century world, Jesus' words make no sense. And they weren't meant to. Jesus isn't actually giving people advice about how to behave in order to gain maximum benefit in the cut and thrust of society. As was ever his way, he's disrupting that status quo. He is challenging the assumptions that lie behind the decisions people take. Even the decisions they take at something which seems so trivial and yet really isn't. As where you sit at a wedding. Most of Jesus' listeners, I'm sure, would have gone through the same logical steps as I outlined, probably instinctively, and they'd have come to the same conclusion. Taking the seat at the back actually doesn't work. It doesn't make sense. Unless you change the rules that you're playing by. And as is so often the case, of course, that is what Jesus is really challenging his listeners to do. He makes this a bit clearer when he goes on to challenge the wisdom of the day in a much more direct and explicit manner. When you throw a dinner, don't invite the people who will invite you back, because if you do, you will have been repaid. Which, of course, was the point. You invited those who would offer an invitation in return. That's how it worked. I scratch your back, and you, in turn, will scratch mine. And the people you invited, the people who attended when you invited, they defined who you were, where you stood in the pecking order, what you were worth in society. And that attitude, that was a far more important thing for Jesus to challenge than any social niceties regarding seating plans. Don't invite those who can invite you back, he tells them. Invite the ones who can't. Invite the poor, the cripple, the blind. Invite the ones who are outcasts, the ones who are so low down in the pecking order that they have nothing to offer you, no return invitation, no honor or status or prestige that might rub off. Invite them. And trust that the reward you are missing out on will come instead from God. Because what Jesus has done throughout this exchange, this pair of discussions really, is to ask this question, to raise this challenge. Where do you expect your reward to come from? Because in all your careful attempts to get a seat of honor, to get into the right circles, into the right conversations, to be seen with the right people, and in your careful choice of guests, when you throw a party, picking people who will come, they won't offend you by saying, no, you're not important enough. But they will come and they will bring honor, inviting those people who are there or just a little above where you are. In all of that, it comes from this place, from this desire to get a reward from those around you, from your society, your culture, your subculture. That reward might be as simple as a meal invitation in return, or as subtle as the respect and honor that comes from being seen with the right people. But it's still the same. It's looking for a reward which others around you can give. And there's a fairly consistent theme, I reckon, in Jesus' teaching, that if you do things that earn you a reward, that earn you the honor and admiration and respect of others, then you've already been paid. You've already got what you earned. That is the economy of the world. That you play by the rules of the world around you and you earn the reward of that game. That comes from the world around you. But, Jesus says, but do good when no one notices. When you don't earn praise. When you don't get payback, honor, respect. Then you're playing by a different set of rules. Then you're playing by the rules of the reign of God. You're acting, in fact, Jesus says, like God. The one who gives with no expectation of reward or of return, but gives simply because giving is what love does. So I think our reading today speaks to us twice. The same message, but in different ways. It speaks to us as guests, and it speaks to us as hosts. It speaks to us as those invited and as those doing the invitation. For we are invited to come as guests without status or honor. Invited though we don't deserve a place at all, let alone a place of respect at the great banquet, we are invited. And we come and we take whatever place is there, whatever seat is available. And when we do, the host will lift us up, honor us with the place that we do not deserve. That is the nature of grace. That is the nature of God's invitation to us. Undeserved even to be at the banquet, and yet raised up to a place of honor. And so we are then challenged to share that invitation, just as we're challenged to share all we have with others, with those not like us, with those who have nothing to offer us. Not just those who we find easy, who speak our language and share our values, but with all. And I wonder how this might be a challenge for us as a Christian church in Australia today. It's no secret that the church in Australia is not right now known for its all-embracing invitation, for its extending of love and value and welcome to those who are different. In the public sphere, the church is not seen and known for fighting to include the marginalized, the excluded, those who have nothing to give. But perhaps one lesson of humility for the win is that maybe we shouldn't be so concerned about the public appearance of the faith. We don't control it. In a sense, it doesn't matter to us. Why do you care what other people think? Perhaps part of the lesson of Jesus's interactions at this wedding banquet is that we might worry less about what the world thinks of Christians as a whole and more about how we as individuals and as a Christian community live and love and serve that world regardless of what they think. Perhaps taking the seat at the back of the wedding banquet might mean putting our energy more into our mission than our image, more into our service than our reputation, faithfully loving those that God places around us and not worrying what it looks like. And just perhaps then we might hear Jesus' words, "Friend, move up higher." We might find that there is truth in his saying that those who humble themselves will be exalted. Not just in some final reward, but in the reality that actually there is something deeply attractive about people who care more about doing good than they care about looking good. Or perhaps we won't. Perhaps we will remain in that seat at the back by the toilet door, unnoticed, mixing with people who are lower than us. But even then, we hold on to Jesus' second promise. You will be blessed because they cannot repay you. You will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. Amen.